there can be medical consequences for women donating eggs. That's according to a new documentary called Eggsploitation by the Center for Bioethics and Culture Network. Hi, welcome to the Bioethics Channel, a production of the Center for Practical Bioethics. For more information about the center and its programs, visit practicalbioethics.org. practicalbioethics.org. Glenn McGee joins us. He is the John B. Francis Chair in Bioethics at the Center for Practical Bioethics, the Editor-in-Chief of the American Journal of Bioethics, and he has written and spoken extensively about the ethics of egg donations. Now, Glenn, it's not really news, is it, that women donating eggs need to be aware of the medical demands of the process, but do we, or the fertility industry more specifically, fall short in that respect?
Laurel, that's a great question. The fertility industry already gives away part of the problem. Egg donation is an area that is not researched very thoroughly in terms of those medical risks that are associated with a young woman's giving eggs. And so I think we are all worried in the world of reproduction, including those who are responsible for the big associations, about whether or not young women understand risks at two levels. One, the medications that you take before you donate an egg, hyperovulation medications that stimulate you to produce many more eggs than you would otherwise, are potentially risky. There have only been a couple of studies published about that, and one suggested quite the opposite of the other. For years, when young women were recruited to come in and discuss risks about that and volunteer to donate, they'd all ask the question, and I myself did a study that indicated that clinics would just tell young women routinely, in fact, out of 30-something clinics we studied on the East Coast, I think two didn't, all but two, said that they didn't know of any significant risks. Well, are there any? Is there a way that the U.S. government has erred or that researchers have erred? There's a problem here because there isn't money to study these things. You hear that a lot, too, from the scientists who also practice medicine in this area. There's no research money. Part of that has to do with abortion politics. How would you get these eggs? How would they be disposed of, et cetera? Part of it, though, has to do with the fact that there's not a lot of incentive to do the research. If you found a risk, you wouldn't be doing anyone any good. It's not like a number of other areas of medicine. The other risks that people, I think, don't hear a lot about have to do with your future. What if everything goes just fine for your body? You know, there's a risk if you donate these eggs that you might become infertile from the needle that takes the eggs out. There's some other physical risks for your future. But imagine that everything goes okay and a baby is born and a happy couple or individual somewhere has a baby. And whether or not you as an egg donor know that baby in the short term or what your relationship is with the people who take a baby home, the long term's a whole other deal. And we learned in the 1970s from adoption, as young people began to say, I want to know my, and then many of them actually used the phrase real parents.
Or natural parents.
Precisely.
Right.
We should have, I think, very quickly, when this technology took off, begun to recognize the potential that people would want to identify their so-called bio, what we now call bio parents, and that in fact presents a dimension to this that young donors don't think about when they donate, or at least so studies show. They don't consider the fact that someone might show up and say, you know, you're my mom and A, you owe me because you didn't reveal that you have this disease in your family, and look, now I've got it, and my whole life I should have been preparing. Or B, you know, could you come for Christmas? Or C, and I'm sorry about the fact that you're married to somebody else, but, you know, or D, I need money for college, and it just goes on
But the implications go on and on.
They're enormous, yeah. And because sperm donation has been around as long as sperm has, we know that this does, in fact, happen. For women, it's a much more problematic kind of thing because it happens right smack in the middle of their career cycle. And many women who donate eggs, just to give the point real flesh here, the price that is set for egg donation is around the country pretty much commensurate with the average amount of credit card debt for college students. This is one of those areas where...
Amazing how that works.
Amazing,
huh?
Isn't it? Who would have guessed? I mean, you know, there are fluctuations that have to do with, you know, the super eggs from super people. It's great to be tall and blonde. It's fabulous to be... Everybody's heard the stories about Ivy League eggs and so on. But the truth is that the solicitations are built around need, and a lot of these are folks who are keeping secrets already when they donate those eggs because they don't want to tell mom and dad about their credit card debt, and that's how they do this. So while they do say in surveys, "I'm doing it because I want a baby to be made," what are they going to say in 5 years?
Well, the idea of that price entering the picture, the Society for Assisted Reproductive Technology states that compensation can be up to $10,000, and anything beyond that would be unethical. But then you see some studies about how within college publications, there are some solicitations that offer well above that $10,000 figure, mm-hmm. and then it tends to go up the higher the SAT score.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Some years ago, I coined the term reproductive malpractice, and I coined it because I think there is no area of medicine, there may be now, but there hasn't been, that is less regulated than reproductive technology. Now, if you say that and a member of the ethics committee from the ASRM or SART, the two organizations that you'd mention in talking about reproductive medicine, they'd scream at you. No, that's not true. There's tons of regulation. There are regulations about how labs are run. There are regulations about the use of material from one sperm donor over and over again, et cetera. There are all kinds of regulations that govern how we keep the statistics, and the Centers for Disease Control do that. But, you know, all told, there is less regulation about babies made from egg donation than there is about the manufacture of compact discs. Or to put it a different way, it is easier to obtain a child through egg donation than it is to obtain a cat through adoption from a clinic. It is literally an area where there's not, and I think that's why people object. They don't, I think, so much object to the commodification. It depends on who you're talking about. There's lots of people who object, but whether you're talking about the commodification of it, or if it's an abortion issue, or if they're objecting on the grounds that women are being exploited. In the latter case, in California in particular, the stem cell debates have really brought that on. People have said that women are being encouraged. And then encouraged beyond some point at which it becomes coercive, and it's arguable that is it's just a position of liberals that, you know, after all, or that it's even sexist. Although feminists are the ones who make the argument that it's sexist, but we all know those kinds of claims. The abortion claim, different, but it's self-evident. And then the first piece is sort of idea that. That we shouldn't traffic in tissue. I'd opt for consistency on this one. My concern isn't so much that there's a market in eggs or even that the market is so loony. If I had to pick problems in reproductive medicine to fix, I'd fix a whole bunch of other problems, mixing things together, doing experiments without any real research standards and so on. A lot of things I'd fix before I'd fix this. But this is definitely a case where, you know, you either put it in the class of we can sell plasma, we've been able to sell sperm. There are plenty of body parts that are already commodified, you know,
so that
schools buy cadavers.
So in this respect, the idea that there might be some squeamishness over trafficking in body parts isn't as much of an issue with you. But where it gets complicated is you get the abortion politics, you get the stem cell politics, mm-hmm. and that's where it really becomes complicated, right?
Right, because you're trafficking in creation. You aren't giving, as it were, a piece of yourself for some person who already exists, is ill, and has a hole. And there's a very profound difference. And even there, Titmus, the person who wrote the book called The Gift Relationship, that sort of set us where we are about organ transplantation, which is that the philosophy stands in the U.S. with some detractors, but the rules are you can't compensate. Now, states can give $300 for funerals and so on. But those philosophical principles that undergird the idea that you should not be compensated are built around a kind of an idea that there's a special relationship between two people. In this case, there isn't another person, really. There's a person who's going to make a baby, but you're not really donating to them. And that's where it gets nutty. And, you know, so I guess if it were up to me, and it's not, but what I've written from the time I wrote my very first book called The Perfect Baby, I dealt with this in three chapters, and I followed three women who went through making a baby through egg donation. And what I found was that it was quite clear that the more complex the relationships became, the more obvious it was that people who donate and people who receive a donated gamete are at risk, and that what's really missing isn't a law. What's really missing isn't better preaching. What's missing is the idea of a family that has a family story. So, you know, I worry about the problem, as it were, of what kind of story are you going to tell the child who's made with egg donation, so that when they're 9 or 10 or 15 years old, and either you do tell them or they figure it out, or let's just say you decide you're going to tell them from the start, like most folks do with adoption, what will you say? What do you say about the fact that there is another mother? It is very different in terms of our society's storytelling than having another father.
It just seems, in looking at this, that there's a dark side, maybe even a lot of smoke. But I'm just wondering if there's enough there of the dark side and the smoke to really start addressing the regulatory side of this.
You know, Laurel, you always drive at the right question. And so I'm always puzzled, because it's hard to answer the right question. The wrong one's a softball. I think, yeah, you're right. There should be regulatory action. Here's the problem. When people take regulatory steps, they often do the wrong thing. In Pennsylvania, famously, a Harrisburg state senator, after a man used a surrogate, who was an egg donor, obviously, to make a baby for him that he had ordered from Indiana by phone, right? Went to pick up the baby, and on the way back, the baby had a bit of a cold, and on the way back on the airplane to Philadelphia, essentially beat the child to death. Child dies within a day or so of the airplane flight. Of course, the guy's accused of murder. And in uncovering the details of this reproductive relationship between this, you know, person and this buyer, what came out was that he was living with his mom, that he, you know, he hadn't had a job in a zillion years, that he was had multiple cardiac events and was virtually unable to move because of his morbid obesity. It just all went on and on. It was a nightmare story. So this Harrisburg legislator, who was anti everything to begin with, he saw his opportunity, and I'll never forget sitting in front of him in Pennsylvania listening as he argued that we should ban surrogate parenting, egg donation, and what's called gestational carrying, where, you know, somebody's made the egg donation and then you carry it so that moms don't have to feel like that there's too much of a connection. The argument was based on the idea that parents make huge mistakes, and more importantly, this sort of idea that where reproductive technology is concerned, you need to kind of have a driver's license. Whereas with regular old birthing, you can have a couple glasses of wine,
and there
and
you
off
go.
You go,
yeah. Yeah.
and that's a big issue, because I mean, you know, there are some of us who actually would go as far, and I would, who would go as far as to say that for these technologies, family courts ought to be involved, particularly when they're new technologies, and more importantly, that maybe we should be more rigorous than we are about the parenthood standing of people in our society who just use regular old reproduction. Maybe we should be a little, I'm not saying we should give Chairman Mao's one child rule here, but I think when people say, well, just because you can do anything, if you're of legal age, anything goes in reproductive technology. An argument that's been made since John Robertson wrote his famous book on reproductive rights in 1971, I think that kind of libertarian position just doesn't fly. So it's a tough one for everybody. And more importantly, this is one of those issues where, while Catholics, of course, oppose all forms of reproduction that involves egg donation, it is not the case otherwise that this is a strongly political issue. And in fact, Catholics comprise more than 60% of patients in the United States who use in vitro fertilization of one kind or another.
Okay, Glenn, let's get down to a bottom line here. You have sons, so it may not be as much of an issue for you in that respect, but I have a stepdaughter in college. And what would you recommend if my stepdaughter would call me, tell me that she was considering donating her eggs, and she was asking for advice?
Well, Laurel, I think the first thing you'd say is thank you for being the first young woman in history to call and ask such a question, because the nature of this game is that people don't want to talk about it, and that gets at what I think you're really asking me. I think that the advice that we want them to get and we hope to give our children ourselves, or at least somehow to put in front of them, we want that message to be that everything is not as it appears in the world of creation. There are a couple clinics, and I mean a couple clinics, and as in fewer than two dozen in the United States, where there is on staff a psychologist who works with not only egg donors but also with the recipients of eggs and makes relationships that work. And often those are great situations. There are plenty of families who've had, you know, use of egg donation, and things are just great. But there are also, for every one of the clinics where there's that kind of capacity, there are 100 people who practice who do not have anything like that capacity and who have enormous lack of – instead of having counseling and discussion that might even be aimed at making sure you only get the people who really know what they're doing, you get – a safety-only evaluation that's aimed at making sure you don't accidentally end up with a baby who's going to have a cancer you could have known about, and thus you'll get sued, and a whole lot of marketing in its place, right? So instead of counseling, you have films, and that's why a film like this one could be so important. I have seen many, many films, and of course the Hollywood builds television programs around new reproductive technologies now. So it is the case that there's a lot out there and that it's no longer a weird world to people that are familiar with it. But it's another thing to be that young woman who's talking to a parent or a best friend. You want to make sure that they understand that if something goes wrong, it's not like you'll be able to just point a finger. You are a participant in creation. A baby is going to be born if all things go as one expects with your eggs. And the relationship you create on a piece of paper, whether you're going to know that person or not, et cetera, those relationships, I've read these fabulous stories by incredibly erudite people about getting to know their egg donors. It just make you warm your heart. It's just not like that most of the time. Most of the time, life is a little bit more, as you put it, dark, or let's just say it doesn't quite work out the way we think it will. And knowing that, I mean, this is a bit like deciding that you're going to make a baby without any of the rituals we have to help married couples when they do that. That's scary.
Glenn McGee is the John B. Francis Chair at the Center for Practical Bioethics, the Editor-in-Chief of the American Journal of Bioethics. He's written extensively and spoken extensively about the ethics of egg donations. My name is Laurel LeBou. Thanks for listening to the Bioethics Channel.